So we have Mallory Hinderlong in charge of women's soccer at Auburn University. I'm so thankful that she spent the time and the way I got to know most of these people like you. I followed you on social media and started seeing a pattern of, man, there's a lot of great movements, a lot of great progressions. Two, she loves what she does. She practices what she preaches. I stalk you and listen to your other podcasts. Love the skips, the bounds, the speed work. So I was like, let's get it. And I love the history. It's like you're watching a career at 1.75 speed. You've done a lot and climbed very fast. So I thought we would get you on and get some insight for interns, GAs. And we certainly appreciate your time, Coach.
Yeah, I'm excited to do this.
And then Blake, we'll start with business, kind of intern Blake Wilson, intern Florida's former football player, has some kind of, we call it business intern, things that can help young coaches advance like yourself in this profession.
What's up, Coach? Kind of being nomadic, frequent kind of moves. Were you looking, or did a school reach out to you when you were looking for jobs?
Yeah, I always tell people my resume sometimes looks like a red flag when you first look at it because I've been a lot of places. But I think it's important to touch on, right? I took an intern position at TCU and then was there for 8 weeks. Was it the right place, the right time, and connected with the right people, and was fortunate enough to get them good GA position. Interviewed for a few full-time jobs while at TCU in my GA and didn't get them, right? But I always think it's important to touch on, I think I did well on those interviews. I was just green. I was still new, didn't have a lot of experience, and someone was a better fit. But people who interviewed for me for those jobs then went on to recommend me for jobs later down the road. So I always tell young people, right, leave a really great impression. Even if you don't get the job, those people could recommend you for something later on. Took a part-time job at UNC. So knew that was going to come to an end as well. Then while at UNC, I think I interviewed for about 6 jobs, 4 of them at the exact same time, and just ultimately landed on Baylor. I love the state of Texas. I wanted to be back to Texas. It kind of checked a lot of boxes for me. And then once I got to Baylor, people always say the first job's the hardest one to get, and it was hard. I interviewed a lot. And then once I got to Baylor, I never really was looking necessarily. People reached out, and I was always looking for, like, what's the next best move for me? Where am I trying to go career-wise? I really sat down, made a list of, okay, this is what I'm looking for in my next stop. And if that position had filled some of those boxes, I would pursue it a little bit further. And there were times I got in the interview process and I was like, okay, this isn't the right fit for me. I'll pull my name out of the hat. And then ultimately, NC State was the next best move for me career-wise. I knew I only wanted to work with soccer, and that position was soccer only. And then 6 months later, the position at Auburn opened up. My mentor, my now boss, she reached out to me. It was a no-brainer for me to come work for one of my own people.
Next question. You know, what does the conversation kind of look like when you leave to take another job?
I'm thankful that, well, first TCU and UNC, those weren't full-time jobs. So people I was working alongside of knew, right, I'm looking for the next best thing for my career. Once I was at Baylor, my first full-time job, I had a boss who was extremely supportive. And every single time I was approached for a job, I simply went to his office and I was like, hey, I was approached about this job. If I was considering it, I would tell him why. I had my list of, okay, these are the reasons why I'm going to pursue this job, or reasons why I may be not interested in the job. And he was really supportive of, right, my development and who I wanted to become as a coach and as a person and where I saw myself, short-term goals in the next 3 years, 5 years, so on. Sometimes he'd be honest and he's like, I don't think that's the right move, but I'm going to support you with what's best for you. And there were hard conversations, and sometimes there were tears because I went through some interview processes and I was like, you were right. That wasn't the best move for me. And now I'm having the hard conversation of pulling my name out of the hat. But I think it all comes back to having a great mentor and a great support system. Right. And I always say, if I went in my boss's office at that time and he wasn't supportive of that and wasn't supportive of my growth and my development so early in my career, to me, that's a sign I'm in the wrong place. I definitely should be looking to go elsewhere.
It kind of confirms the decision you made to move on if they were bitter or angry.
Right.
And it's, were you more nervous? Because this is 28th year coaching for me, and I've had those conversations. I was always more nervous walking in their office to tell them I was leaving or interviewing than I was when I first got there interviewing. Was it the same for you, kind of just the nerves before you walk in?
100%. I was always really nervous. I think, and I'm an overthinker. I'm a perfectionist. And I'm forever indebted to my boss at Baylor, Coach Chris Root. But I'm indebted to him forever. I think so highly of him. He influences every aspect of my career thus far and just who I am as a person and what I stand for. And I view him as a mentor, put him on a pedestal. But I was still nervous walking in his office every single time. I felt like I was letting him down. But I always remind myself at the end of the day, like one day he'll leave, right, and go on to something better. One day the AD will leave and go on to something better. The student athletes are going to leave. And that's where I always come up the most. I love my student athletes. But one day they're going to leave, right? They're going to go on and flourish and do great things. And at the end of the day, they got just as excited for me about my opportunities as I would be for them and think that they were right. But I think, you know, Coach Rio, if I sat down with him at the CSCCA conference once I was here at Auburn, I had spent 6 months at NC State, got to Auburn, went to the conference, I sat down. We talked over a meal and he's like, you didn't need to go to NC State. I still think that was the wrong move. And I was like, yeah, I think at the end of the day, he probably is right. I didn't need to go there. I don't think that was a step that helped my overall development as a performance coach, but there were things personally I needed and I learned there that I carried with me into this role. I don't think that was a role I needed to take career-wise necessarily for the X's and O's of strength conditioning. But it was a role that I needed for my own, like, mental well-being.
Sure, absolutely. Like, what else you got?
So, what does a day look like for you, you know, in season versus off season?
Every day is different. Even in season, every day is different. But, right, for anyone else listening to this, I have one sport. I have women's soccer at Auburn. I have 27 student athletes, and that's pretty much all I have to worry about. Sport-wise, I have other administrative tasks within our sports performance department. But a day typically looks like for me, I wake up, I take my dog for a walk, I usually get my lift in. The first half of my day is pretty slow. Then I sit down, you know, we do a wellness report. So I sit down at 10 a.m., send out the wellness report, check in with the players. Typically, I've already sent out a catapult report from practice the prior day or our match. I'm having conversations with our coaching staff that morning about practice planning and physical periodization and any changes that need to occur going into the training session in the afternoon. For example, today we have film at 3:30, we lift at 4:30, we practice at 6 p.m. So I have a lot of free time to do a lot of work at my desk and connect with people like yourselves. And then a day like, what is today? Today, like tomorrow, we have practice at 2 p.m. So that day is going to look very different for me. We don't have a lift. I'll spend a lot more time over in the soccer building in the middle half of my day having conversations about practices, about return to play athletes, things of that nature. Really, every day is so different. But I think now that I only have one sport, I spend a lot more time interacting with our coaching staff and talking about practice. Like, I play a pretty large role in the periodization of our practice plan, drill selection, who's practicing, who's not practicing, what buckets are we trying to fill that certain players didn't get in matches.
Well, I'm curious, what interaction do you have, if any, with, you're under the umbrella of Olympic sports, do you meet as a staff, do you share a facility, do you have brainstorming sessions, or what does that look like?
Yes, my position does fall under the sports performance umbrella. So I do work on the staff with all other Olympic sport coaches. So there's six of us full-time that live out of this weight room and train our teams in this weight room. That is everyone but the footballs, both basketballs and baseball. Every other sport at Auburn trains in our weight room. I share an office with four there's four of us in my office. Two of them are in here right now, right? And two of them are new. They just started 2 weeks ago. So we've got some fresh energy in here, a lot of good creative ideas, and we're moving in a really positive direction. So here comes one right now. So we do meet. We have weekly, bi-weekly meetings to talk about different topics, right? We all have different roles within the department. One of my roles is support science to build out the department. Don't ask me what that means because I'm still figuring out day by day what it looks like. Other people are responsible for a GA, or other people are interns, you know. Some people are in charge of like facilities and keeping the upkeep of that. So we do all have different tasks within the greater scheme of the department. And I would say our AD of our department, our director of our department, right? She doesn't want to lose the mission of like a collective group of Olympic sport coaches. We don't want to become siloed to our own sports and only worry about that.
Do you share the weight room with another team at any point?
Yeah, our weight room is really large. We live in the old football weight room. Basically, it's two separate rooms. We have the old true weight room, and then we built the weight room in the indoor that's connected to this building. So at any given point in the morning, you'll walk in this weight room. There could be four teams in here. So in the morning, track and field, softball, volleyball will be in here. Then you'll have swim and dive come through. Afternoon is when we tend to see like men's and women's tennis, women's soccer, gymnastics. Typically soccer trains at the same time as gymnastics. So I do really appreciate that still. Student athletes are seeing their counterparts that play other sports work hard at their craft and to be really good at that. It's fun to see the gymnastics girls are strong. I always tell our soccer ladies, I'm like, they may be short, but like they are mighty and they may give you a run for your money in the weight room.
I like that. You got one Tiger family that's kind of training together and sweating together. That builds a lot of morale for the Tigers, no doubt.
Yep.
Like, what else you got? You got another interview. I like there was, because you got, like you mentioned, you had like six interviews, and that's always something to prep interns and GAs for. It's not an exciting part of this journey, but it's a necessary one.
So then, best interview question you've been asked personally?
I think a question that stumped me early on, and so I don't know if it's the best, but a question that stumped me is like, what is leadership to you? And I think early on in my career, I hadn't put much thought into that question and didn't have a great answer. So now I always try to like prepare people for that. But I think this maybe is not the best. I don't know. I'm going a different direction with this. Something you should be prepared to answer and share about yourself, or what are your core values? Like, who are you as a person, more so than like, what are your core training values? Like, what's your training philosophy? That's great, but these days people are really interviewing you and they want to know what type of person they're getting. Are you great at collaborating with others? What's your communication style like? How do you carry yourself? Are you going to say good morning to people when you walk in a building? Like, right? I want good office space. When we were interviewing two new candidates, I just wanted to know they were going to be good people who were going to work hard and bring good energy into the space.
Do you look at it, because you're on the other side now, if you were interviewing, how much do you value experience? Are you willing to take a chance on someone like yourself when you first started? What do you value? If you had a ranking system or a rubric when you're looking at a resume, experience, how does that rank for you?
Yeah, I think clearly experience is important. I think these days it's hard. You look at someone like myself, I'm very niche. I love soccer. I know I'm not going to work in anything but soccer at this point in my career, but I want someone who's probably worked with a vast array maybe of sports and hasn't gotten too niche too early. One, because that tells me, okay, a lot of different movement patterns, just the physiology of things, but also you've probably worked with a handful of sport coaches who think differently, athletic medicine, who treats injuries differently and manages things differently and just operated in different spaces. So that's one thing I look for more so when it comes to experience. Has it been very like only worked baseball, or have you dabbled in some other things? I don't look necessarily so much at, okay, time of things. But I think it always goes back to what's your staff currently made up of, right? If a someone's interviewing for a job and everyone on staff is really young, maybe they need some more tenured experience. Where we were sitting in a situation, two of our staff members have been at Auburn for one 10 plus years, the other almost 10 years, right? So we could bring in some younger people with fresh ideas that maybe didn't have as much an experience on paper.
When you were at TCU, was that kind of your experience multi-org with football, multiple sports, did that help you decide, hey, I want to be women's soccer only, or did it make you think, well, maybe I'll try a different sport?
Yeah, at TCU and UNC, I was exposed to a lot of sports, especially at UNC. I think they have more sport programs than any school in the country. I worked with fencing. Like, who can say they worked with a fencing program, you know? I knew once I got to TCU and experienced soccer there, that's what I wanted to do. It was between soccer and football for me. I'm loud, I'm bubbly, I'm energetic, I'm outgoing. Like, I can get in your face and scream, and it's kind of, I can be that in the football space or in the soccer space. I've had to learn to like dial back a little bit, and kind of, I have to adapt to my group. But I pretty much knew leaving there, I took the position at UNC. So I could be a part of UNC soccer culture and have that on my resume.
Strong. How many championships have they won? 27, 30?
I think it's 23.
It's not shattered. It's not bad. It's a lot of banners on the wall for sure. Let's put a ribbon on business intern. Blake, you have one you want to finish with or move on to nuts and bolts? All right, Brock, we'll take it from here with nuts and bolts, kind of strength and conditioning items.
So your background is more the sports science. What kind of systems, like GPS tracking systems, are you using with your athletes? And is that something that you're leaning more towards in your programming? Or is that just like a background thing to enforce, to like help to show how things are going or not?
Yeah, for sure. So we utilize Catapult GPS here at Auburn. I have utilized Catapult since the time I arrived at TCU, and this is something I'm becoming more passionate about and hopefully going to speak about more often, maybe on my social media. I applied to speak about it at the CSCCA this year, so fingers crossed they approved for me to get on a stage in front of people. So I was basically thrown with these devices when I was a GA, asked, hey, can you figure this out? And I look back at that time and I failed miserably, and it just through trial and error. But now I operate in a system where, yes, our athletes wear a GPS device anytime they step foot on the field. Practice, a match, they're doing additional work with the coaching staff, they're doing additional work on their own, they're conditioning on the weekend, they're doing one-off speed sessions, they have a GPS device on them. In simplest terms, I sit down with the coaching staff weekly and lay out what the physical periodization of practice should look like, right? Their job is the technical, tactical side. My job is to kind of guide them in. These set of drills should fall on this day based on the physical demands, right? Today's a reintro session. We played on Sunday, had off yesterday, first practice back. This is also match day minus three. So we're match day plus two, match day minus three. My high-minute players, we're just trying to get their feet back under them. We don't want a ton of acceleration, deceleration efforts. We don't want a ton of sprint distance. So a lot of our work will happen in medium-sized spaces, not overly combative. Now, our low-minute players who didn't play in Sunday's match, still pre-intro, they have kind of almost 2 days off. We don't want to come throwing things at them too heavy. But they can accumulate a little bit more of acceleration, deceleration, sprint distance, because they didn't get those buckets filled on Sunday during the match. They didn't get it filled on Saturday the day before the match, right? Because we're match day minus one, we don't expose them to that. Now it's my job to make sure they're being exposed to that stimuli so that when their name is called, whether it's this week on Friday during our match or a year from now, right, they are prepared. So then, and I'll give another example, a match day minus one. A match day minus one, you don't want a ton of acceleration, deceleration again, right? That stress on the lower limb, really taxing central nervous system going into a match. a day like tomorrow, that's the match day minus two, that's going to be our heaviest session of the week. I'll give the coaches a threshold of player load, a threshold of high speed running, and acceleration, deceleration efforts. The goal is to get to that positionally at some point. We're just not there yet. I've been here for 9 months. Our coaching staff's still understanding all these things I'm throwing at them. But, right, the goal is basically to bucket athletes by positions, fill the buckets that aren't being filled in the match. Sometimes that means I do top-up runs after practice. Sometimes that means I add extra acceleration, deceleration work before practice. And our athletes know it's love. If you have to condition extra after practice, because I want the best for you, and I want you to prepare to play when your name's called. I know I just threw a lot at you with that answer.
So your sports science, you don't have a sports science GA. That's your role that's tied in to, so obviously what the explanation you just gave was wonderful. You're hands-on, you're not getting handed a report. You're living it every day, every practice.
Yes. And yeah, I am the sports science department. And I would say, honestly, with this coaching staff, it hasn't always been this way. I've had these thoughts and this philosophy and the way I've wanted to live this out and support a program, right? That's my job. My job is to support the coaching staff and support them in educating them to make the best decisions when it comes to player selection and practice plans and drill selection. I haven't been in the space to do that, and or didn't have the coaching staff that understood that to the full extent. This staff, it's Monday at 8 a.m. My coach is calling me yesterday, and he's like, why haven't you sent me the physical periodization for the week? And yesterday's our off day, you know? Like, they're eager. They want to learn. They want to set our athletes up for the most success. And they want to be better, and they ask really good questions that challenge me. So I stay in an exciting position because I have really high expectations for my coaching staff, how I'm going to deliver and how I'm going to communicate with them. But the goal is eventually I'd have a GA. I do have two interns that help me with just like the day-to-day of turning the devices on, cutting the practice session live at practice, but I handle most of all the work on the back end.
What's something that you could give, like say, GA or intern that wants to go into sports science, what's something that's helped you or that you've seen throughout your time working with the technology? Because like you mentioned earlier, you know, there is a little bit of a learning curve since everything's starting to go that way. You know, is there something that could give us a leg up or, you know, to help us with that resume?
I'll focus on GPS data because I think sports science is a very broad thing. And I'm working through educating our GAs on Catapult and GPS system. And I think it's one thing to know how to run the system. A lot of people know how to turn the devices on, how to track it live, how to make a graph and look at player load, but can you communicate the information in a manner that your coaching staff understands? And that requires you to understand the sport at a very high level, right? I have to understand what soccer actions elicit a player to decelerate, accelerate, change direction, right? And then what drills elicit those soccer actions and then elicit those basic actions? That's what I call a basic action. The basic actions, horizontal acceleration, deceleration, vertical acceleration, deceleration, right? So you look at drill selection, they elicit these soccer actions, and then these basic actions are elicited from that. I'm just understanding that. And I played the sport of soccer. I didn't get it for so long, but I think that's one thing I've loved about all my stops in my journey. I've been around a lot of different soccer coaches, different philosophies, and I've learned a lot about the game of soccer from them, which I think has helped me the most in my sports science like endeavors when it comes to GPS. So I would say you have to know more than just how to run the system. You really have to understand your sport and your coach's philosophy.
Question, and I'm going to get specific, and if you don't have an answer because you're not in a situation, let's say we don't have GPS, Division III school, but in order to prepare Brock or whoever it is, someone who listens to this same situation, is it worth it? If you know, you could get one, knowing it wouldn't necessarily have the team, but would it help Brock or someone, if you, we just had one to learn how to use it, and if they get the opportunity down the road, it wouldn't be the first time they said, oh, here's a GPS and you don't even know how to turn it on.
Yeah, I think the first part of learning the system, that's the easy part, right? Like, if you, I understood that pretty quickly. You could go online and learn how to turn the devices on and download the devices. That's the easy stuff, and I think it's what people pick up pretty quickly, where the part that I'm talking about, right, is understanding drills. So go out to, say, for football practice. Understand, right, I bucket my drills. So I'm gonna really dive in here. All my drills in practice are bucketed. It's either large, medium, or small, based on the dimensions, right? The coaches, we sit down, plan practice, like dimensions of every drill, right? So that's like the size of your drill. So I bucket each drill based off dimensions, large, medium, small. Then I bucket it based off of density, what I call it. How many players are in that space, right? That's gonna influence the demands of the drill. So if you can just start kind of understanding, oh, and creating a drill database, right? And you can watch the drills and understand, okay, are they accelerating a ton? Are they decelerating a ton? You can even stand there and count one player if you really wanted to. That's how they used to do GPS. They used to stand there with a stopwatch and count for how long they sprinted. So I think, right, starting to understand like the language of the sport, how coaches, and you can influence the practice structure simply by that way. You're smart enough to understand, okay, when the space is larger and there aren't as many players in the space, they're probably more likely to get a sprint or accumulate some high-speed running. When the space is smaller, they're probably more likely to accumulate acceleration, deceleration. But if it's small with a lot of players in it, they're probably not moving that much. So I'd say those pieces of the part of my job that now I've like spent a lot more time doing, that's a way to kind of start learning, just exploration for yourself, right? And then maybe one day when you land somewhere that has GPS, you can sit down and be like, okay, like, was I right on my estimate of these drills tend to expose athletes to these stimuli, or was I a little bit off, or was I totally off?
Do you ever look back at the data from a year ago, kind of compare, maybe if they seem fatigued, or you look back and say, what did we do last year?
Yeah, right. I've been at Auburn for 9 months now. So, and we have basically flipped a roster. By the time I got here, we have 15 units. It's basically half new. We played a different formation in the spring. So understanding that as well, how does that different formation we played in the spring elicit different stimulus and demands for different positions, right? And that's another rabbit hole you can go down, right? What my center back is doing on the field compared to my attacking winger, two totally different demands. But yeah, I even look back at data I have from other schools, right? Maybe that's a little violation, but I have data from all the schools I've been at. So sometimes I sit down and compare, like, all right, how different was it when I was at Baylor, the average load in the match compared to now? We have to take into with that, right, playing time. So another tag I do is, okay, how many minutes the athlete participate in the practice or in the match. And I just, for match day, I have low minutes, modified minutes, high minutes. 5 minutes is anyone above 60 minutes. Modified minutes is anyone above 45. Low minutes is anyone below 45. Or you just bench. So.
Well, if you have one laying around your office that you want to send to us, you're not using, we'll gladly experiment with it.
I could probably hook you up with some people. I know some people, not a catapult maybe, but I know some people, one of my former coworkers at NC State, she now works for a company called Player Data. Maybe I shouldn't be saying that with this logo. Maybe I should be
from
she works for a company called Player Data. I'm sure she's more than happy to help you out. They're a good GPS company.
Make sure that off the record we can exchange numbers
there. Because even if you can get a device on a few athletes, your top athletes most likely to play the most at different positions, right? And you could see positionally what are the demands tend to be in this drill. What do they tend to be in the match? And you can start cultivating like ideas from there, right? Because like what I said, my central midfielders in the match cover a ton of acceleration, deceleration. my wing players, anyone that plays on like the flank of the field, cover way more sprint distance. Both really stressful, high intense efforts, but different. And so then when we're planning practice, I need to fill those separate buckets for those athletes.
That's good. Good stuff. I learned a lot. I don't know anything about GPS, so I enjoy hearing about that and how you use it. Not just the data, but it doesn't mean anything like the buckets and you're seeing it in practice. That's different than saying, hey, put it on and I'll look at the information later.
Yeah. I mean, I did the, hey, put it on and I'll just send a generic report for years. But now I know I have a staff that looks at everything I say and values it. So it's exciting.
How do you incorporate that side of training, as in like the conditioning, the filling in the buckets, towards the weight room? Do you guys do like a pre-practice lift, or is it like more of a warm-up before their practices?
I love the weight room for my soccer team. I think I probably share that a lot on social media. I view the weight room for soccer athletes like it's prehab, it's rehab, and it's performance enhancement, right? So I'll take what I get. And I don't really complain. So what I get right now is 2 days a week. Match day minus two a lot of times. Today it's minus three. So play on Friday, we're going to lift today. We'll lift before practice, typically on the first day of the week for 1 hour. This is our heavy strength day. It's where we're doing the highest volume of work in the weight room. But I do have to take into account that we're doing it before practice. And this is also going to be one that typically it's the heavier practice of the week. So I'm probably not going to overload the hamstrings or the groin area too much, just because they're going to go out and practice sprint and accelerate. I will still do something like we'll do a lying hamstring curl or an ISO long lever hamstring bridge, but I've shied away from doing like heavy RDLs and things of that nature before practice. But we still get after it. And I think we've laid enough of a foundation where I'm not concerned about that. We haven't had any issues. And then our second lift of the week is match day plus one. So the day after a match, that's where the group is split in a lot of different buckets, you could say again. We have a high minute group, so players that play substantial minutes in the match. We have kind of that medium minute group. I give them a lot of autonomy over what they want to do based on how they're feeling. And then we have what I kind of view as like the foundational athletes. Maybe they're redshirting. They're not playing a ton right now. They're going to get after it. They spend a lot of time with me on that day. They practice full. They lift. And they probably are doing some type of conditioning.
So different groups, like say you have goalies, for example, how are you training them compared to your outsides, middles and stuff? Is that, are you letting them get after it a little bit more in the weight room, or are you still going through your speed program with them and just keeping them all together?
Yeah, I'll be honest. The level I want the goalkeeper program to be at is just not there yet. I know I've been here for 9 months, but 9 months flies by, and I sit back, and when I got to Auburn, this group was extremely like foundational. We had to teach a lot of things, and that's really been my focus, is how do I get the group to buy into me? How do we move really well and then start to add load to those movements? In our weight, I would say their program isn't necessarily adjusted based off of their position. For the goalkeepers, a lot of it is just based off of training age, which most of us are really young training age. Injury history, so we have some goalkeepers, low back things, wrist things, different implements for different things based off of that. But that just goes across the whole group. So a day that we're doing a reverse lunge. So like in my program right now, we had front rack reverse lunge. Some of our kids are on safety bars, some are doing front rack. I have someone on a trap bar. I have someone on a pinch shark. I have someone doing dumbbell reverse lunge, and I have someone doing rear foot elevated. All those things were happening based off an array of things, and none of it really ever had to do with their position. Like back to the original question, our goalkeepers do some extra work in some specific things, grip strength, targets, some core low back work, they do come in and get an extra lift in sometimes based on travel schedule, and they have extra conditioning, and their conditioning is very much so tailored to them.
All the options you have, if it's off season, they don't have those options. Is that just in season where you have the charge reverse lines, or is that throughout the course of the year?
That's throughout the course of the year. I used to be really married to like exercise selection and being like, okay, we're all gonna like front squat. And I'm kind of evolved and adapted. And I think my experience at NC State is what made me evolve and adapt the most, because I worked in the men's program there, and we had about 50% of our team was international. The weight room is extremely new to them. About 30 to 50-ish% of the team were grad transfers. And so I was coming into a new program. Half the team was new. Half them had never been in the weight room before. And I'm like, okay, here are your options. I need you to do something. A lot of them hated the weight room. They just wanted to play soccer. Yeah. But I think I met them where they were at and gave them some autonomy over their program and over how their body felt. And I won, and I kind of carried that with me here. I have a girl on the squad here from Spain. She didn't know what a strength, because she was confused who I was and who our athletic trainer were before she got here. She's just used to a physio, right? And this world is so new for her. And we just aren't having luck with front squat or any front rack position. So we've done trap bar, we've done pitch shark, we've done some dumbbell stuff. And I'm just meeting her where she's at. And I want her to feel comfortable and confident to share with me how she's feeling. And I think we've gotten to that point. So for me, it's more so, okay, there's a lot of different tools to accomplish the goal that we're trying to reach.
I like the way you mentioned that, how, you know, it's tough. You know, say you have a lot of athletes, you want them all to do the same thing. But I like how it's more of like a personalized thing with one team. Where you're like, all right, this is what we're going to do. If you guys are confident with this lift, you can go ahead and do it. But here's some different things. so you're still getting the same work, but yeah. You know, it might look a little different for a different athlete if they're.
Yeah. And another example, I have a fifth year transfer who got here this summer. Pretty extensive injury history, right? She's going to be here with us for 4 months total by the time we start season and season. My goal is for her to be healthy and available. And that means she's probably not in certain lunge positions bother her. We're probably not going to do front rack reverse lunge. So she feels comfortable doing rear foot elevated. Let's ride with rear foot elevated. I want you to feel healthy and available for match selection and healthy and available for practice selection. And she's our leading goal scorer. So, hey, if that's what you want to do, that's what we're going to do.
Last question here. What do you do? What's your speed training kind of look like? Is that something that you're integrating with practice, with your bucket drills, or is that kind of something you're doing on the side? Like, hey, this is what I want you guys to achieve and carry it into like practice or your game week.
I think there's a lot of different layers to this for me, and it looks different in season, out of season. So I'll start with in season right now. I spend a lot of time on the field at practice. I warm the group up for training. So we do microdose, you could say, all of our speed work into our warm-up before practice. I follow a match day plus or minus flow that you've kind of heard me talk about. Everything when it comes to drill selection for practice, physical periodization is based off of this plus or minus. And so my speed work, acceleration work, change direction work falls in line with that, right? So we'll do some acceleration, change of direction work a little bit today, but then tomorrow we'll get a lot more of that in before practice. And then kind of to touch on the buckets slightly, I'll fill the buckets, right? We'll have athletes, but they don't play a lot in the match. Match day plus one, play on Friday. Saturday before practice in our warm-up, high minute kids will step to the side. Those lower minute kids will get in more acceleration, max speed work. Right now, a lot of my max speed work, I just let come organically in practice. And then if our athletes haven't hit above that 90% max velocity for X amount of yards based on their positions, then we'll fill those buckets. Maybe it's pop-up run after practice. I'm preferring to do that right now rather than before practice. So I wouldn't say we're doing true max speed, like speed training. We're doing a lot more acceleration work over 10 to 20 yards. And then I'll leave our max speed work for some top-up runs after practice. But they're getting a good amount of high speed for sprint distance in a training session. And then touching on out of season, in the off season, during our 8-hour periods, I run our speed sessions over here on our grass before we go in the weight room. So those are much longer in depth, probably 30 to 45 minutes before we get into the weight room. But then we transition to our 20 hours, they tend to go before practice, but still those sessions are longer than when we're in season.
Anything else, Carl? Do you use VBT in the weight room?
Yes and no. I've integrated, I have, when I was at Baylor, that was a large component of our program, and especially in season. Here at Auburn, I've tried using it in the spring and just had a lot of people moving in funny ways, chasing numbers. And I didn't think it was the biggest thing for my buck. And now I have a group of 15 new people and haven't gotten back to it.
And it would be difficult if you had the variety of movements too, then you're setting different speed value, you know, that would be another layer that would be difficult.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I think my group is, they were really undertrained. They have a really low training age. And so my job was easy because anything I do with them made that better. And that's where I'm still sitting at right now.
Yeah. So the day, and I've never outside the soccer world heard plus one, minus three, but I love it. It's so not your plus one, your heavy 1 hour session, if I remember plus one correct, but your after day. How long a session is that day after the game? That would be a plus one. Is that correct? Yep,
that is a plus one.
How long is a plus one session?
About 60 minutes of soccer. So I'll warm the group up and whatever that looks like on that given day. 60 minutes of soccer for our low minute players. Everyone will warm up for practice, including high minute players, and do a passing pattern, just getting their feet back underneath them. A lot of the times, that plus one is also a minus two. So if we play on Thursday, plus one to Friday, then we're playing on Sunday. We got to get our feet back under us, get back on the field, feel good about ourselves. And then the high-minute players will break off and do something with me on the side, some mobility, foam roll, hurdle series, feel good before we go in the weight room. Where our lower-minute players, or maybe those kids that are on the bubble, like moderate minutes, they'll go do more possession-based, competitive, combative type drills to finish off the session.
In a hypothetical world, if you only could train once a week in season, would you A, leave that world for a different world, or B, how would you handle that if you get once a week, Monday, what would that look like?
Well, I would hope I would never do that. But I've been in that situation. I was in that situation until I got to Auburn. And so I think I would just stick to what I do right now on my, like, Tuesday list. So what helped me today, I would just ride with that, right? It's total body. We're going to do an event, a hinge, some type of hinge or posterior chain work, a push, a pull, core stabilization. And I'll touch on, right now I kind of spread out my hip flexor adductor work. We'll do neck strengthening things. I kind of have these buckets of like what's important for a soccer player. But I would just make sure we touch on all those things on that one given day.
But it'd be tough, wouldn't it? You'd rather live in a world where you get one once.
Yeah, and it would be. And so I have found in the past when I only got one day, I would try to get in some like hip flexor adductor, different things on the field. Our men's soccer team at NC State, I would have them do like Copenhagen's with one partner, like holding your leg, and they're doing Copenhagen's on the field. Like there, we had a very, sometimes what you can see the pros doing, where they're training on the professional soccer players, where they're training on the field with their kettlebells. We had some of those moments, right? But okay, I'm going to, whatever I can get, I'm going to take, and I'm going to find a way to make it productive for our group.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you do any type of contact prep? in the off-season movements to prepare that, you know, you might see in rugby or something, even American football? Do you integrate that into your training?
I'll be honest, I haven't done a lot of that, but that's a conversation our coaching staff and I just had a few weeks ago. We think, I love our girls, but we've been a little soft, and we need to be more aggressive when it comes to contact on the field and kind of like make ourselves known and tell people like, okay, we're here to play. So we've started integrating some of that in our warm-up. Like our girls will go shoulder to shoulder and do kind of like combative runs and things of that nature. And I have ideas to start doing that more in the off season, just to kind of ramp up and expose us to that before we get to the hour peaks this spring. So maybe I'll have a better answer later on.
I'm a big fan, of course, with football, but we started using it with basketball and other sports, and I can see it adding benefit to soccer. We haven't done it with them yet, but hopefully this offseason we will. Rapid fire questions, kind of wrapping up. And it's been an amazing conversation. Time has flown, and I've enjoyed every second. What book, either A, are you currently reading, or B, what book would you recommend to the interns, GAs in this room that would help them grow professionally?
Right now I'm reading a book called Let Them Theory by Mel Robbins. She has a really well-known podcast, but the whole book, I haven't gotten figured out, I just started it this weekend, is about basically like just dropping what everyone else is thinking about you, basically like let them think that about you, let them have that philosophy, let them live their life that way, and just worry about yourself. Another book I would recommend that I've read.
Who's the author, Robbins?
Mel Robbins.
Is she written? I feel like she's written several books. Is that a great author?
She's written a book called The 5 Second Rule.
4, 3, 2, 1, get out of bed, kind of thing.
That book is really good too. She's also read The High Five. Something about High Five, like Power of High Five.
I know someone really well who read that, and The 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 was just on loop. I thought it was supposed to be one rep, and then you get up, but it was just, I think it was multiple reps, and it didn't work quite like we thought it would, but it's a good concept.
You tried doing it?
My wife may or may not have read that, and she shared that with me. Like, what are you counting in the morning? What is that? Well, it's 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and you wake up, and you start your day, and we're still working on that. What do you not know? And the example I gave was isometrics for me. That it, you know enough to be dangerous, but you want to learn more about it. Is there something in the field that you're looking into or you're curious about?
Yeah, I think the rabbit hole I'm going to start going down, or I've been interested about for a while, is just like jumping and jump metrics and our force plates. I've always had them. I've used them, I would say, but I just basically have collected data, kind of how I've talked about with how people use Catapult. A lot of people have it, they collect information on GPS and do nothing with it. I would say I fall in that bucket for our force plates. But I got a new great coworker here that is a jump master, works with volleyball, so get your people in your corner and teach you things.
Awesome. Coach, appreciate your time so much. Off the conversation, we'll get information, maybe the GPS connection you have. I'll send you some contact prep stuff we have. I think it's 28 different kind of movements we go through, and it's very time efficient. You can build it in your warm-ups, and War Damn Eagle.
Yeah, War Eagle. I'm glad we could do this. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
All right. Yeah, y'all have a good day.
All right, bye-bye.